Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
I will suffer from the same thing with my kids, and my kids suffer because of that in me. And I know very often there are times when something's going on and it needs to be addressed, but I know if I do it, there's going to be conflict, it's going to require energy, or they're going to get ticked off, and I would rather have the moments of happy fun. Oh, Dad, what a great dad you are.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I think he wants to communicate.
Are you trying to give me the double talk?
That's what I'm talking about.
Who do you think you're talking to?
We want to work on our communication.
Now you're talking!
As parents, when we're raising our kids, when we're trying to establish relationship with them, one of the things that we want to avoid is conflict. And yet, sometimes conflict is a part of life that helps us really achieve lasting success because we have to reconcile our way of thinking to God's way of thinking. Today on the Homeward broadcast, parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns will air part two of his continuing conversation with pastor and author John Ortberg about values and about finding success in the game of life. John is the author of the book, When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box. It's a book about values, and we're going to keep on talking about this important issue with John today. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. And now, here's Jim. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. John Ortberg with us today. What a privilege to have him. He's the teaching pastor at Menlo Park Presbyterian Church in California. He is an author of several of my favorite books. John and Nancy live in Northern California, and John is just, as I said previously, is one, in my opinion, one of the finest communicators in the country, and he resonates with me. He wants me to grow in my faith, and I go deeper when I read his material. He has a great book called When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box. Actually, we were talking about this, where it kind of started with a Monopoly game with his grandmother, where he finally beat his grandmother, who was a pretty good Monopoly player, and then it went back into the box. And that's kind of the illustration of life, and we've got to keep an eternal perspective. John, we've kind of been walking through some of the principles about this, and you have a principle that you say yes to reality. I want you to talk about that.
Well, the great challenge for all of us is to want to live in our own worlds because it's just more comfortable. And there's an old saying, I don't know where it initially comes from, but pain is what you experience when you bump into reality. And when I can say yes to reality, I talked to a friend a while ago who was just pointing out a problem area in my life, just a reality that I can get caught up, preoccupied in my own world and not connect with the other people in ways that are meaningful to them and that I really want to be able to do. And my first inclination was to say, no, that's not me. I'm a pastor, for crying out loud. Of course I love people. Yeah. But then to step back and say, you know what? Yeah, that's part of me. It's not the whole story of me, but that's a part of me. When people are open to reality, and I think the only way to do that is if you feel that security in God. But then when you're open to reality, you can grow. And when you can grow, you never know what the limit of possibilities are.
What do you say to the wife or the husband who says, I wish my wife was realizing that because they don't really understand it. You know, in Harry Met Sally, there's this great phrase that says, you know, she's high maintenance of the worst kind. She thinks she's low maintenance. Yeah. I love that phrase.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of people who are saying, yeah, fine, but, you know, my spouse isn't living in reality.
Yep.
What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, the obvious response is focus on your own ability to live in reality. And I think that's true. But I also think that very often in families and very often in Christian families, we suffer from a kind of terminal niceness, and we don't help each other live in reality. And we say it's because we love people, but the reality underneath it is we're just afraid. We're afraid of confrontation. Yeah. I'm afraid of saying, Jim, here's part of what I understand to be reality with you. At the church where I used to work, Willow Creek, the senior pastor, Bill Hybels, often would talk in relationships about what he would call the last 10%. And it is when we're having a conversation, let's say we had a conflict a while ago, I'm going to bring that up with you. What I'll often tend to do is say, you know, that was just kind of a bumpy conversation. That was kind of hard. I just want to let you know. Instead of saying, Jim, when we were talking, My observation, could be wrong, but my observation was you felt defensive and stubborn to me.
Yeah.
And it's that last 10% where you seek to speak it in love, but to be clear with it at that moment when you're most likely to pull back and fuzz it up.
It's interesting to say that because we want intimacy, and it's that last 10% that really does brings the intimacy in a marriage or with our kids. And yet, again, most people aren't willing to go there.
I was talking to another guy just yesterday. I thought this was such a great distinction. He said that there's a difference between an arrangement and a relationship. Hmm. An arrangement is a situation where everybody's trying to make each other feel good. A relationship is where you speak the truth as you say. You say what you really think. And growth and intimacy are only possible in a relationship, not in an arrangement.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great point. And I think sometimes people are literally afraid to go there. And that illustration helps them realize, wait, I'm in an arrangement with my spouse right now because
instead
I'm not
of a relationship. Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, and I see that in my own life with Kathy at times that, you know, there are times when I just simply don't want to go there. I remember one night in our, we were having one of those, you know, couple discussions, and it was about 11 o'clock, and I was exhausted. And I knew Kathy threw something at me, and I knew it would go about a half an hour longer if
you spoke what you thought the truth
was. So I you know, said, I think you're right, and went on and went to sleep. And the next morning, I was very troubled. Yeah. And I said over some coffee, I said, Kathy, I need to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I lied to you. And I did. I thought, was it really a lie? Well, actually, it was a lie.
It was, yeah.
And I said, I was so tired, and I disagree with where we ended this thing, and I need to come back. And you know what was interesting? It was one of those, for us, and it's not always the case, but it was a good relationship conversation.
Yeah.
And I think it took longer than half an hour for us to work through it. Mm-hmm. So I paid penance a little bit for that. But it was important, and I learned a good lesson, and that's a great lesson for a lot of our people. You also talk about regrets. I've got a t-shirt that I wear sometimes that says, no regrets. And you talk about the key component to finding success in life, or at least one of them, is to prevent regret.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Well, it's stepping back and saying, if I simply drift in this moment, or if I drift through this day, I will inevitably be involved in certain kind of activities that are different from what I value the most deeply. And there's a story in the book about Thomas Carlyle, who's a Scottish essayist and writer, and it's kind of a killer. Yeah, he ends up marrying a woman who had worked for him. Her name was Jane, and then she had health problems, and then she dies. And he goes back to the home, and then he finds there's a diary that she kept, and she would write about, I listened in the hallway for his footsteps all day, but he didn't come. And you know, I had a few moments with him, but he didn't really notice. And he never knew until she was gone how much she meant to him. And the default mode just tends so much to be, you know, for him, it was writing and success and career and reputation. Right. And one person to love makes all of that stuff just look so empty and vacuous. And then when that opportunity is gone, then the regret is huge, but there's nothing you can do.
Yeah, and what was interesting, when I read that in your book, I was thinking, you know, that was a big thing for him, but also for her. What she should have said was some of the things she was writing, she should have said that to him.
She should have told him, yep.
So it goes both ways.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
And you know, so again, I was focused at first on Carlyle, but the fact is that his wife could have said something. I don't know what would have happened, but it's an important, she had some regrets too.
I'll tell you, Jim, the longer I'm around churches and families, the more I think it's always a two-way street. And very often what happens when there's distance or a blow-up or something, we point to the obvious wrongdoer. But sins of passivity and avoidance are every bit as blameworthy as sins of impulse control and that kind of stuff. But those people generally don't get targeted.
No, that's true. I and that's sometimes me. I was telling the group at this conference that you and I were speaking at, I spoke at last night, I said, you know, I can be passive aggressive in my relationship with my wife and with my kids. And somebody came up to me and said, well, you know, I know you. I don't see you as that. I said, well, you don't see me at home. Yeah. And I can look good on paper, but, you know, I don't want to get involved in the conflict or whatever. So I back off and then I'm the nice guy. And sometimes in a relationship, whether with couples or as parents, you know, the nice guy isn't the best parent because the nice guy wants for some reason to be liked so much by their kids, they're not willing to, you know, lay it on the table.
That's a huge issue. And I will suffer from the same thing with my kids, and my kids suffer because of that in me. And I know, you know, very often there are times when, something's going on and it needs to be addressed, but I know if I do it, there's going to be conflict, it's going to require energy, or they're going to get ticked off, and I would rather have the moments of happy fun, oh dad, what a great dad you are, and I make them pay for my own brokenness, but it looks nice.
That's powerful insight from John Ortberg here on the Homeward broadcast, and today on Homeward, we're talking about finding success in the game of life. You're listening to parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns and his continuing conversation with John Ortberg. And if you missed any moment of this program, remember, we are streaming audio at homeward.com. There's no cost to access that. We also podcast through iTunes, and you can start that free subscription when you go to homeward.com, hit the podcast button. It'll redirect you to our spot on iTunes there, and then that way you can join the tens of thousands of people who podcast the Homeward Daily edition of the program, this Monday through Friday edition of Homeward with Jim Burns. Comes through podcasting each and every weekday. And if you'd like to be part of that growing number of people, we'd love to have you. And push those broadcasts around as well, too. Nothing more gratifying than someone saying, hey, friend of mine, let me know about what you're doing through just kind of an email or a text. And I'm really digging the podcast now, too. Thank you for your support of Homeward. And there's more with Jim Burns coming up as Homeward does continue.
Conversation we're having today with John Ortberg, Dr. John Ortberg. He's written a wonderful book. It's called When the Game is Over, It All Goes Back in the Box. We're talking about life purpose, and we're talking about how finding success in the game of life is really much more than just the outer stuff, but the inner stuff. It's great for us, and very seldom on this program do you get just two folks sort of talking about spiritual life and talking about our own spiritual life, but I think we're learning some great lessons today. I want to take a sentence, John, that I took out of your book and underlined. Often we're so busy protecting our innocence that we don't even notice our lack of integrity. I want you to comment on that as it pertains to the whole idea of, you know, playing by the rules.
Yeah. Had an interesting conversation a while ago with a guy named Dallas Willard.
Mm-hmm.
And Dallas made a comment that just was so striking to me. He was talking about what a negative thing reputation is, just reputation in general. I thought, that doesn't make sense. I've always thought to have a good reputation is such a good thing. And he talked about how being known and our efforts at managing what people think of us are so destructive to the human soul, and they just go so deep inside of us. It's hard for me to have a conversation without you. In fact, I'm not capable of it, where there isn't a part of me, a tiny little voice that's going on that I'm not even aware of, that's saying, oh, say this, don't say this, be careful about how you say this, so that I can get other people to think of me in the way that I want them to.
Right.
And all of that can blind me from the deception that is actually inside of me.
Right.
And to seek to be truthful and to be real is so much more important than to maintain an image. But part of why it's so difficult, it's another one of those blind spot deals, is after a while, I don't even see it. I'm not even aware that I'm doing it.
Right. That's why, again, we have to live in community, because so often, I mean, you think about all the churches. You know as a pastor, and I know, that every person out there in those seats in the pews or wherever they're sitting, those are people who have struggles and issues and whatnot. But on Sunday morning or Saturday night or whenever it is, they look like they have it together.
Yeah.
So somebody walks in and they kind of look around and say, well, you know, they've got it together. Our family's the only one that's kind of messed up.
You know, at our church this last weekend, it's funny you raised that issue. I talked about one of the things we struggle with. A woman said, I drive by your church, people come outside after the service is over, and they all look like they're all so together.
Right.
That for a long time I said, I just could never be a part of something like that.
Right.
So I just went through, here's problems, angry, bitter words, sexual problems, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, addictions, kids that are far from God, parents that feel like failures, depression, anxiety, just a whole list of stuff. And then got to the end of it and said, now, everybody who's been troubled by something like this in your family, kids, parents, you, would you stand up? The whole congregation stood up. And it was such a good moment to just have us all standing there. I'm standing too.
Mm-hmm.
To say, okay, now let's remember this picture. And, you know, part of what I talk about in the book is the shadow mission.
Right.
And that for our church, the shadow mission is a successful church for successful people.
Yeah.
You know, that's our end, to say, okay, we don't want to be about the shadow. We want to be about the reality. And the reality is there's never been a golden age for the family.
No.
We're just little sinners that become big sinners, and that's what we struggle with.
Great, great comment. I want to get back to that shadow mission in a minute. I was thinking about with integrity. You know, the Bible says that the man or woman of integrity walks securely. And I think that their children will be secure if they walk with integrity as well. But the interesting side to it is integrity doesn't mean you have to be perfect. Integrity really means more about authenticity. So by somebody standing up and saying, our family doesn't have it all together, that's more integrity than basically kind of hiding and acting like you have it together.
Yeah. You know, if you think about that connection between integrity and integer, a whole number, mm-hmm. that there's something about the concept that has to do with wholeness. And a part of wholeness is the entire reality of who I am, owning my whole story. Yeah. And there's parts of my story that I'm proud of, and there's parts where, you know, I feel inadequate, parts that I'm embarrassed about, parts where I feel right. geeky, and, right. and parts where I have deep shame. And that's all me. And to own all of that with appropriate transparency, that's integrity.
No, and I appreciate you saying appropriate transparency, because you don't want to just share it with everybody, because there are, you have different levels of relationships.
No, because I mean, I know things about you that if you were to say it over the radio, it would just send people screaming into the woods. And I would never absolutely. Share that in absolutely. This kind of setting.
You know, I am using deodorant now, though. So and I am taking showers more than just once a week.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's
yeah,
a good thing.
And your nose hair situation is much
yeah.
better.
I've trimmed it a little bit. I've yeah. spent a little time. I'm still working on that, though. Okay. Isn't radio wonderful? Because now the people are saying, what is wrong with this guy? I'm going to give you a quote that actually you quoted from somebody else in your book, and you said, those who rush arrive first at the grave. Mm. It was in your chapter, which was a great chapter, called Fill Each Square with What Matters Most in the Game of Life. Mm. Talk about that.
There's a kind of a long section in there by a wonderful guy, teacher, who passed away a few years ago named Lou Smeeds. And he has this great metaphor, another kind of box, where he would talk about every year he would get a new leather-bound calendar. And I have to do all of my livings in each box. Each box defines the boundaries of my life. And to fill every box, to fill every day with the best kind of life. And it's so interesting, Jim. I'll look back on when I was a kid and think of going to school. And I'll think of, you know, it's an opportunity to learn, to grow, to be with other kids, to care about them. And I would often be burdened by, what kind of grades am I getting? What is my teachers thinking of me? How are my parents going to... I just worry about stupid stuff. And I look back at that and think, gal, don't be preoccupied with that. But of course, the reality is now I'm 50 years old and the categories are different, but it's the same dynamic. How's my life going? How's the church going to go? How am I doing? How will this talk do? How will this book do? What do people... And it's so small and petty, and to be liberated from that, to be free from that, so that I'm just free to fill each day with love, joy, learning, and growth. Oh, I want that so yeah. much. And yet, it is such a struggle to bust out of just the confines of brokenness.
Yeah. And, you know, interesting enough, what you're talking about is simplifying our life in many yep. ways, because we're so overcommitted and underconnected, and we're going here and we're going there, when in reality, we've got to focus on just those basic things. You know, who was it? It was that great theologian, Vince Lombardi of the Green Bay Packers, so long ago, that said, when you stray away from the basics, you've gone a long ways toward defeat. And, yeah. you know, there are basics in our faith, there are basics with our family. And a lot of times, if I look up, I say, you know what, I'm not living by the basics of my commitment to my relationship with Kathy or with my kids. I know them, but I've moved into something else or whatever. And if I just go back to the basics, or go back to the basics of my relationship with the Lord. Now, a lot of this is really about finding mission in our life. And it's funny, I'm in a support group on Tuesday with incredible men. These are men who I look up to. They're mentors. All of them are mentors to me. I'm so fortunate to be with them. And yet, at the same time, we're still talking about finding mission. Some of them are retired. Some of them are, you know, at your age, you know, whatever. But the truth is we're still looking for mission. And I think you can help us understand that. And you told a great story about a principle that played out in life with Johnny the Bagger.
Yeah.
I love that story.
This is a story. It's from a woman named Barbara Glantz, who's a speaker. And she'd been speaking to a supermarket chain of employees, like thousands of employees, and talking about creating moments of connection and significance in your work. And she got a phone call later on from a 19-year-old kid who told her proudly that he had Down syndrome. His name was Johnny, and he was a bagger at a store. And he didn't know, you know, what could he do that could make a difference. But he had this idea that he'd come up with a thought for the day. So he had his dad show him how to use the computer, and he would find a thought, or if he couldn't find one, he would make one up and type it into the computer and then run off and cut so that he would have hundreds of copies of that thought for the day and then sign the back of it. Mm. When he finished bagging the grocery, he'd put that thought for the day in and hand it to the customer and say thank you. And the manager called Barbara about a month later and said, our whole store, stuff's going on. Like, I was walking the floor last week, and the line at Johnny's counter was, like, to the fruit department, like three times longer than all the other lines. So I got on the PA to tell the, you know, checkout people to open up another line. And the customer said, no, we don't want to go to another line. We want to be in Johnny's line. We want to get Johnny's thought. And we don't mind waiting here. One woman came and said, you know what? I come here now every day. I shop here every day because I want to get that thought from Johnny. And the, you know, the missional piece to it is, it's not that he had to do something dramatic. And in fact, the burden that he had because of his condition, because of the downs, not only did that not get in the way of his mission, that's part of what made it so meaningful to people. It was out of his own struggle that other people received his gift.
Yeah. Well, I thought you said it well. I mean, you said your mission, in your mission, you can use your weakness. Your mission is not necessarily about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mission will use your strengths. And Johnny, it's a perfect illustration that we can do those kind of things too. Don't have much time left, but I want to ask you this last question because we've been talking around it, but you, the game of life, game of Monopoly, yep. what we were talking about, is you put it back in the box. And I think death is a part of life that many of us try to avoid. Mm-hmm. We avoid talking about it. We don't want to talk about it with our loved ones. We don't want to, you know, go through all that thing. But as we consider successfully playing the game, you remind us that this king has one more move. I want you to talk about that.
Well, there's an old story. Nobody's sure exactly of the origin of it, of a chess game. A couple of guys go to a museum and they see this picture of these two characters playing chess. In some versions of it, one of the characters looks very much like Satan. And it's titled Checkmate. And it looks like somebody's down to their last move. But one of the two guys who's looking at this picture is a chess champion. And he says, just friend, you go ahead and keep wandering through the museum. I want to keep looking at this. And finally, he says, you know what? There's something wrong. It's labeled checkmate, but I've studied this and I'm a chess master. And I've determined that the king has one more move. Huh. And there's a guy that I heard that story from who pastors in LA. And it's just a great, great story. But that whole idea that even with death itself, death looks like the ultimate checkmate, the ultimate end of the game. And we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it with our kids. And we need to talk about it with hope because always, always, always the king has one more move.
And that is so good. And he has the last move. And that's really what we're talking about today in many ways is focusing on the eternal so that we can make our life more successful in the now. John Ortberg, thank you for being with us. Always a privilege. I love this conversation.
Jim, you just make it a joy. Thanks.
And that concludes part two of Dr. Jim Burns' two-part conversation with pastor and author John Ortberg here on the Homeward Broadcast. We've been discussing, the theme is finding success in the game of life. If you missed any part of those programs, of course, go back to the archives at homeward.com. Or if you'd like a copy of the full-length audio CD, we'll be happy to send you one. Just include a gift of any amount in support of our ministry when you write to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, where the swallows go, the zip code 92693. You can also browse online for any of the number of materials that we make available without cost or further obligation. And you can also purchase one of Jim's books through homeward.com as well. As a matter of fact, as we're talking about this lesson in priorities and values, check out Jim's Pure Foundation series. Don't just stop at the abstinence talk with your kids when talking about sex and sexuality. Make it an ongoing dialogue about sexual purity. Jim has books available for you as a parent, whether your kids are 3 or all the way up through age 17. And you can find that information at homeward.com.
Well, please know how much we appreciate your prayers and your ongoing financial support of Homeward. You can give a gift through our secure website at homeward.com. You can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. You can also friend me on Facebook. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can now get my tweets, 140 characters of positive words about parenting, marriage, and faith. Until next time, I'm Jim Burns. Thanks for tuning in today to Homeward.
Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.